And I am your host for the show. Today for episode 17, I'm actually finally excited to announce that I've got Scott Bennett on the show from the Juicebox podcast. It's been time, and there was a little bit of illness that delayed the recording on my part, but finally I've been able to get Scott on. Before I do introduce Scott, just a little bit of a disclaimer. You know I go through this every episode. Anything Scott or I do mention on this episode should not be taken as medical advice or other. I always suggest you always go speak to a medical practitioner before trying or doing anything, but it's always good to kind of throw something new in the mix and throw some new ideas in. Now we got that out of the way. Scott, how are ya?
Great guy, how are you?
Yeah, I'm good. So Scott, just before we get started, I always start with a little bit of an icebreaker. And, you know, just to get things going. And I know, so correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm quite confident from listening to the Juicebox podcast, you are not a type 1 diabetic, you are a type 3 diabetic.
Yeah, my daughter Arden has type 1, I don't have diabetes.
Okay, so, but I still feel like you could answer these questions with a very... with a fair bit of perspective. So, Scott, what is your most disliked misconception about type 1 diabetes?
I guess from a parenting perspective, I don't like that people think that it can be cured or that it goes away, I guess, when you grow up. I guess that's the thing that's been said to me the most over the years. It seems to kind of eat at me is people ask when my daughter's going to outgrow diabetes.
I love the, I've got this great ancient fruit, and if you eat this fruit, oh man, it makes your sugar levels like best all the time.
Guy, not even that. They just think that because they've heard it called juvenile diabetes, that at some point they'll stop being a juvenile and it just goes away.
Yeah, no, that's true, that's true. I had that growing up as well. What would Arden's favorite food that is commonly contraindicated for type 1 diabetes be?
Breakfast cereal, probably.
Nice.
Yeah, like Fruit Loops, and I think she had Cinnamon Toast Crunch today. She's home from school today. They have off from school, and she slept in. Everybody's been sick around here lately, so she slept in trying to rest up, and she came downstairs, and I saw that kind of sideways look, and she's like, "Could I have cereal?" And I was like, "Yeah, sure."
Nice. What are two things that you and Arden do to kind of keep sane when things aren't going so well with sugar levels?
Keep sane?
Yeah.
I don't know what she does. I don't know what she does. I know what I do. I compartmentalize the hours. So, for instance, if Arden uses a Dexcom G5 CGM, a glucose monitor. So I can see, like, you know, the last 12 hours at any point on her rolling graph. And if there's been, you know, if there's been 6 hours that were just a mess, I stop looking at them. I compartmentalize. I just break it down to now and try to start over again. You know, just instead of letting what's happened in the past, even if it's just been the last few hours, the last day or two, instead of letting that make the thing feel like a giant collection of experiences for us, I cut them away and I'm like, okay, those are done. Like, I just need to start over right now. Like, I just find a baseline and start over again.
I like that. Especially with something like a CGM, I think it's very easy to get caught up in past trends. And I think I take that on board. I think it's very valuable if you just cut everything out and try and focus on the now.
I'm so used to driving the podcast that I want to keep talking instead of listening to you. I was just going to say that it's simple to have the last 24 hours, you know, have 10 of those hours have just not gone any way near the way you want, and to make it feel like it feels like a burden, I guess. But I almost think of it as, you know, if I stopped and thought about the last 30 days of my attempts to lose a couple of pounds, I would be put off by that. But if I just think of the last 3 days where I've lost 5 pounds, I'm pretty good. And so, you know what I mean? So, like, instead of letting the whole thing just burden you, just say, you know what, I've had, there's good times, there's bad times, and I'm just going to start over right now with the new good time. That's all.
I think that's a big thing when it comes to diabetes, is understanding that there's good and there's bad days. I mean, something I want to talk about more, but just briefly, I mean, my CGM transmitter decided to pack up and leave. So in the meantime, while I'm getting that fixed and everything, I'm naked. I'm not wearing a CGM, and it sucks because I'm used to having so much control and so much, but it's easy control. You know, it's just having a quick glance at the pump, seeing what I am and adjusting accordingly. But, you know, I woke up with sugar levels at about, American standards at about 180, and that's a little bit high. And I know that if I had a CGM during the night or even before bed, I could have corrected that and woken up with a 7 or a 6, or for, in your case, you know, mid-150s, 140s, 130s even.
But is your point that you still can do that without it? It just takes more effort, right?
It just takes more effort, a lot more testing, but it's just also easier. Like, you tell me glancing at a pump versus taking out the checking kit, putting in a strip, you know, pricking your finger, putting it on the machine. You know, these things take, and as well, you don't get a trend. You just get a number at a specific point in time. Yes. But this is definitely something I want to cover, so I'm going to cut myself there. Sure. Last but not least, three things that, I guess you and Arden together used to manage her diabetes. Like, what are three keys to the success of managing her diabetes?
It's three simple things. Arden wears an Omnipod insulin pump. It's an insulin pump, it's the glucose monitor, and it's the ability to text message each other. That's the three things. Those are the three things that I use to keep it, you know, if you're thinking of physical things, those are the three things that we use to keep things where they are. And if you're thinking of three, like, I guess, theories, like diabetes theories, then those three things would be pre-bolusing, being aggressive with insulin, and not being afraid.
I've definitely, now that we've done the icebreakers, and I've got free reign, I've definitely, that's probably the biggest thing I've learned in your podcast, from listening to your podcast. And it's something, for those in the audience, if you haven't heard of the Juice Box podcast, I'd definitely check it out. I'll put some links in the show notes. Is to not fear insulin. And it's, you know what, before I was CGMing full time, I was kind of listening to you, Scott, going, this guy's crazy. Like, how is he able to do this? You know, like, how can you be so aggressive with insulin, you know, blah, blah, blah. And then it all made sense to me once I started using a CGM full time. And I understand some other people may not have access to a CGM, and it's not cheap, especially in Australia. It is not cheap, not even covered by insurance yet, to my understanding. But it's definitely something that, you know, it takes a bit of learning from listening to you, from listening to Dr. Ponder, who we've had on the show as well. You know, is my way of seeing it is, you know, I might be high, but at least now I'm trying to get better. So it's a matter of, instead of being high for 6 hours, I can be high for 5. Or instead of being really high, I'll just be a little high. So it's, and it's gone from that to really high to a little high to okay to better. And it's constantly getting better to the point where I'm not spending so much time in highs anymore because I'm a little bit more aggressive. With the CGM, that's made it a lot easier. I very, very rarely have hypos on the CGM because I pick them up before they're low. But that's definitely something I learned from you, talking about the three things you managed to use your diabetes, to manage Arden's diabetes, sorry.
Well, that's wonderful to hear. I mean, my podcast just exists because, you know, my daughter's 12 and she was diagnosed when she was 2. So we've been at it just slightly over 10 years now. And, you know, these experiences, like I like to say to people that things need to go wrong so you know how to keep them from going wrong the next time. And I think I've had enough of those experiences where things have gone wrong that I can finally say, you know, do it like this. And they're simple, like it's just simple ideas. Like you asked me early on, what does Arden eat that she, you know, is probably counterintuitive to type 1 diabetes. And periodically Arden has breakfast cereal with whole milk. And so using today as an example, she gets up, comes down, asks for cereal, and we test her blood sugar, and it was 120, I think. I don't know how to do the conversion for Australia. I'm sorry. But it's 120.
It's times divide 18, so it would be about 6-ish.
When you and if people are hearing me on your podcast or my podcast, they also know that I'm terrible at math. So when you said times divide, now I'm more lost than I was before. But nevertheless, so I would normally like to pre-bolus, you know, with a 120 blood sugar, I would pre-bolus 15 or 20 minutes out. I would want Arden's blood sugar to be 90 and falling when she starts eating the cereal. But we have this sort of miscommunication, and I'm doing something else. And I made this.
Sorry, Scott. That's gutsy. No, no. I gotta say, that's gutsy. Dropping is ballsy.
So it's because the cereal hits so quickly. Then how far are you really going to fall? And in our terms, maybe from 90 to 70 before the cereal hits and starts bringing it back up again. That's how you end up landing it at 100 again. But what happened was is that Arden sort of misunderstood what I said. She got the cereal together. I went off and did something else. And when I looked up again, I realized she started eating almost right away. So now there's almost literally no pre-bolus, maybe just the couple minutes it took her to put the food in the bowl. And so I immediately bolused again the amount of insulin I knew it was going to take to control the high later to stop the high from coming at all. If that makes sense or not, but yeah, I knew... Does. Yeah, I knew because there was no pre-bolus, her blood sugar was going to get high. And when it got high, it was going to take about this much insulin to bring it back down again. So instead of waiting for all that to happen, I just gave her the insulin right then and there. And I can tell you now, because I can see Arden's blood sugar, that it's higher than I want it to be right now, but it's 146. And even though she's recently had insulin, like, I'm going to give her more right now. Like, literally while we're talking, I'm telling you right now, bolus 0.80. Because not only is she 50 or 60 points higher than I'd like her to be when she's, you know, what we consider stable at 90-ish, but I can see a short curl up on the very end of her CGM graph line, which indicates to me that she's about to go the other way. So that 0.8 I gave her, I probably could have made it more like a unit and a half, but I'm scared too because I've stacked so much insulin in the last hour. So just a little more to take the curl out of the CGM line. That makes sense.
No, of course. I mean, it seems like you have, listening to you now and on the podcast, you have a very strict control with Arden's sugars. And like you said, that's a lot of communication. And it seems like, as a father, Scott, I got to say, you've put a lot of time and energy into helping Arden manage her sugar levels to the nth degree, which is amazing. Because, I mean, you said HbA was between 5.9 and 6.2. Like,
yeah, her last one was 5.7, actually.
Wow, congratulations. For me, the last 2 years has been a process from bringing it down from, you know, 8s, you know, and I'm trying to get it below 7, or 7.5 is actually the goal, and once it hits below 7.5, it's not going higher. I feel like some people, I mean, in your case, it seems like you've got, you know, you put in a lot of time and resources, but the question I have, I guess, is as Arden grows up and becomes more and more independent, how are you kind of slowly handing the baton onto her? Because, you know, when she gets a full-time, when she starts studying, like in high school or university, or when she gets a full-time job and there's a whole lot of daily stresses going on and different things are going on, and it's not the same when you've got, you know, dad over your shoulder, you know, sometimes she's going to have to act on her own. So how much of the baton have you passed on to her to give her that independence?
Okay. So a couple of ideas. So first thing is, I know it sounds like with such a low A1C that there's a lot of constant, you know, diabetes things happening. But one of my goals is to not really discuss diabetes much at all in the house. So, and I know you're not being critical when you say it, but when you say over your shoulder, I would tell you that Arden and I have very little contact about diabetes at all. I would tell you that it is much easier to keep a blood sugar at 90 than it is to fight with one that's 300. I think that it takes much more time and effort and intense paying attention to bring down a really high blood sugar than it does to just keep one lower. And so so that's sort of the first thing. The second thing is that the baton swapping, and it sounded so much sexier when you said it with your accent than when I said baton, but it happens slowly, right? So I don't see any value in sitting down with Arden like it's school and saying, now look, when this happens, you have to do this. And when this happens, you have to do that, and making it a lesson. I just think that by doing it day to day the way we do it, she very slowly picks up things and they become more part of her life. And so, you know, a couple years ago, if I would have said to her, hey, you're eating this, how much insulin do you think it would be? She would have said, I have no idea. And now she guesses the amount that I'm thinking. And that's sort of important, Guy, because we don't really count too much on carb counting and what the pump tells us, even though it's a good starting point sometimes. But I know, you know, I can look at a plate at this point and say to myself, this is that much insulin. And that number very frequently disagrees with what the pump says, even with how her settings are set up. Now, you could say that, you know, maybe her settings aren't correct in the pump, but, you know, even when I make adjustments to them to get them closer to what I'm thinking, it's still day to day. The pump doesn't think about things like, does she have a head cold? Is this the third day of the pump, not the first day of the pump? You know, has she been active today or not active? The pump doesn't think about those things. And I'm able to. And what I'm telling you is that at this point, Arden's guess about how much insulin she needs is as close to my guess as it's ever been. So I can see that over time, it's just being handed over to her. Because please believe me when I tell you, as much as I don't want my daughter's life, you know, I wish I could say that my daughter's life wasn't going to be figuring out how much insulin she needed every time she was eating. I also do not want to be part of it for very much longer. It wouldn't be healthy for her. It's not healthy for me. And at some point, she's going to have to be an adult with diabetes on her own, you know. So, you know, hopefully, I'm thinking in the next couple of years, I mean, she's 12, you know, in the next couple of years, I don't think we're going to have as close contact as we do. And I think that's really beneficial for all of us.
Yeah, 100%. I find it fascinating that you use that, you know, you break the insulin to carb ratio, which I think is, you know, definitely makes sense. Wow, got so much to say. I want to make it all make sense. But no, you know what? I was the same when I was much younger. Mum and Dad were much, much more involved. Nowadays, if I showed Mum my pump, she wouldn't know how to use it. So
yeah.
It's just, she's now been a mental and emotional support rather than diabetes support.
Yeah.
With the ups and downs, things can get quite hard. But
for sure. Now that I expect to always listen, I always expect to be a party to that. Yeah. You know, I'm not cutting her loose and being like, good luck.
Yeah.
But at the same time, you know, like she needs to do it on her own. She's going to need to figure it out the way I did. I'm hoping that she can figure it out while I'm doing it instead of just throwing her in the deep end the way it happened to us.
Exactly.
To go backwards for a second, I just think the idea of counting the carbs is interesting. Like if you went to your favorite like restaurant today and got a sandwich and had some sides with it and you gave yourself, you know, the amount of insulin you thought was right for that meal. And when it was over, your blood sugar was 220. To me, that's an indication that it wasn't enough insulin or that the bolus was poorly timed. Like, so what I would say to people is that if your blood sugar is high or low, you've either used too much or too little insulin or mistimed the insulin. And by that, I mean, I don't think people completely understand that in everyone, the insulin begins to work at different times for you. It's not a light switch. You don't put it in, it starts working. So if I had that, you know, that meal, that sandwich at a restaurant today and ended up at 220 tomorrow afterwards and went back for that sandwich again the next day, would I give myself the same amount of insulin at the same time because that's what the pump says? Or would I say to myself, well, no, I did that yesterday and that didn't work. So I either need more insulin or I need a bigger pre-bolus, a longer pre-bolus. Like something has to be, you know, something has to change.
Something's got to give. No, I agree. I agree 100%. And like I said, like, I mean, you know, you're obviously not throwing Arden in the deep end and you don't want Arden to have to learn by burning herself. She'd rather learn the mistakes that you made. Sure. And then, you know, it's obviously an easier learning process, but I definitely hear what you're saying, and it's something that, you know, I always think about. The pump has preset settings. They are like, you know, as long as you don't change the basal day or whatever, between X o'clock and X o'clock, your insulin to carb ratio is going to be 10, let's just say for argument's sake. And sure, your basal between midnight and 4 a.m. or midnight and whatever time is X. No human, like, who is not diabetic, if you could track their basal, it would never be the same day to day. So we are, like Dr. Panda says, which I agree with a lot, is we are implanting a system that is fixed to, like, we're putting a fixed solution to a system that is constantly changing. You know, one night you might go to bed and be stressed, the other night you're not, the other night you had a higher fat meal, lower fat meal, so, like, everything is always changing, and by putting in a fixed system, obviously a system is better than no, system that has a solution, but by putting in a fixed system, like, I mean, my insulin to carb ratio in the mornings is, I think, 17, but that's very high because I'm very active. I've got a very active job. Now, if I, like, it is not my exact insulin to carb ratio, if I could dig inside my body and find it somewhere, the answer would not be 17, at least every day, but...
Right.
17 is an 80%. The number, like, I like to use the 80% rule. It's an 80% hit. So it'll keep me in range. It'll do 80% of the job. Everything else is up to, you know, what I like to call the Red Sox principle, which comes from Megan Patterson. She works for the Australian Artificial Pancreas Program. And she says sometimes when, like, there's no answer to why you're high or why you're low, it's because you're wearing red socks or white socks or pink socks. So... You know, we don't know why, and let's blame it on something because it's better than blaming it on nothing.
Guy, the fix is this, is that you're right. You have to start with some sort of a fixed, you know, system. But then we don't empower people the rest of the way and tell them, look, this is not the end all be all right here. These numbers that we've decided on, this is a starting point. And no one gets in, doctors don't empower people then to make adjustments. They tell them, go home, see how this works out, and if it doesn't, come back at your next visit, and we'll look again. Well, your next visit's 3 months later. That's stupid. Like, it genuinely doesn't make any sense. You know, so now you're going to go back to a person who has not lived with you for the last 3 months, and based on some charts and you talking to them for 5 minutes is going to make some random adjustments in your pump and then hand it back to you again. And then what? What if that's not right? Now it's 6 months you've gone, you know, without this. And what about people who can't afford to go to the doctor every 3 months? I just, you know, what I say to people is this, is that I think you need to just go with your gut. You have to just look and say to yourself, this isn't working. I should do something. And take away that idea. Like, it's a very provincial thought. Like, you know, right? Like, cops and teachers and doctors, they say things, we listen. And most of the times, that's fine. You know, like, I wouldn't eat before a surgery if your doctor told you to, and I certainly wouldn't, you know, reach back into my glove compartment if a cop told you to keep your hands up. But at the same time, if a doctor is saying to you, "Hey, try this," and then come back in 3 months, and that's not working, are you really going to sit for 3 months with your blood sugar at 190, saying, "Well, this is what the doctor said"? Like, it just, and because everyone lives in that moment. Everyone, I guarantee everyone who's listening who has type 1 diabetes or is taking care of somebody who does, when their blood sugar is sitting at 190, it's eating at you inside. This isn't right. I shouldn't be letting this happen, but it's what the doctor said. And so now you have this added stress of knowing you should be doing something else, not sure what that other thing is, and pretty sure that when you go back and ask the person you're counting on, they're not going to know either. You know, so
100%. Scott, you hit the nail. 110%. I think every type 1 has gone through that experience. Well, I hope not, but it seems like, because, like you said, pardon?
It's a safe bet that they have.
Yes, because it is like that. And I got very, very, very frustrated because every 3 months I'd go and they just look at the charts without even, you know, like, oh, you're going high here, but they don't even look or ask about what activity I'm doing. You know, maybe it's because I'm exercising and I'm taking too much of a, too much of a pre-exercise snack. You know, maybe it's not the basal. So, you know, the recommendations are not accurate. And this isn't a stab at endocrinologists, but, like, I don't know. Maybe they're taking too much on their plate and it's a means of they don't have enough time to attend to everyone, but then I don't feel like the job is being done properly. And it's something that I have big gripes with, because you're right. Like, people are sitting with HbA1cs that could be much better. But I do like that flexible way of thinking, that empowerment thing. And that's definitely something that Sugar Surfing, Dr. Ponder's book, taught me. Something that I was so passionate about that now... shameless plug, but Kevin McMahon has actually sent me a box of books, and we're going to be selling them in Australia, because they were previously not available in Australia, but I said to Kevin, hey, listen, man, I'm happy to be your distributor, just send me some books, and I'll send them out to the people. So the book is now available in Australia, and it's a book that I'd highly recommend. There's no secret to success, and that's what I love, is when, especially, I know this is a very hot debate in diabetes, but I'm not a high carb, I'm not pro high carb, I'm not pro low carb, I'm just pro food. I love food, and if you are pro high, you know, pro high carb, you know, you'll find 100 research papers that says why it's good for type 1s, and if you pro high fat, low carb, you'll find 100 research papers that find the same. And at the end of the day, it doesn't matter who's right, you just got to find a system that works for you and that keeps you healthy. And for me, that's been eating like what I'm eating. I'm eating a healthy diet. I find when I'm eating a healthy diet full of vegetables and a full range of carbs and fats and whatever I want, you know, I'm, you know, sugar levels are more predictable, more in range, and things work out. But that's the beauty of sugar surfing and the whole independence thing is, you know, you learn, and there's no need to stick to one. You know, like Arden has the Frosty cereal. I got to say, North Americans, you guys have got it down pat when it comes to confectionery. You have every name in the book, like not even A to Z. A to Z makes it's too broad, too general. We need something more specific, but... You know, I had cinnamon crunch for breakfast with milk. Like any
diet, not even food. There's nothing natural in it. It's probably 17 different chemicals on top of sugar. And I want to say, Guy, my daughter doesn't eat like that very often. But when she does, I know how to take care of it.
Exactly. Yeah,
and so,
exactly.
And so there's nothing wrong with it.
Right. And okay, you know what? The CGM is a great help. Don't get me wrong. Like, I mean, remember listening to you and you saying, like, listen, I don't know where I'd be without the CGM. And that's 100%. I can relate with you. But cereal works. I mean, even Dr. Ponder in the book showed how he, like, over 3 days ate the same cereal and eventually went from okay control to good control to, like, pretty much, like, I am not diabetic control.
Right. So, Guy, let me tell the people who listen to your podcast this simple story that I tell people on mine. Is that when we were first being offered a glucose monitor from my daughter's endocrinologist, the endo told me this very small story. She said she knew an adult who was very excited to get a glucose monitor because they wanted to be able to eat a bag of M&Ms without their blood sugar going up. And it took them a month of eating M&Ms, which does not sound like a bad science experiment, but it took them a month of eating M&Ms to figure out how soon before they began eating should they bolus, how much should they do, how much of a temp bolus did it need, to the point where this person could eat these M&Ms without their blood sugar moving. I was completely motivated by that very simple story, because that man did eventually figure out how to eat M&Ms. And so I just took it to a bigger level. I stopped thinking about just one food, and I just thought about all of it. And the glucose monitor makes it much simpler, because you can be aggressive and know that if you overcompensate, that you can catch a low blood sugar. You know, I would tell people all the time, it is easier to stop a falling blood sugar or affect a low blood sugar than it is to bring down a high one. So I'd rather see my daughter 120 or 90 with an arrow straight down and have to do something quick, like a half a juice box or something like that. I would rather do that than to have her sit at 350 or 400 for 4 hours while I fight and fight and fight to get her blood sugar back down again, usually just in time for her to eat again.
I agree.
You know what I mean?
It is gutsy. Sorry to interject, but it is gutsy. No. But I do, and as a type 1 diabetic myself, it's very hard to bring yourself to that. But I will say, like last night I had a hypo and I took some sweets and within no time I was up. But sometimes with a high, insulin does take a lot longer to work. And unfortunately on the pump, there's no, like, although it says active insulin, you don't actually know how much is when it's going to kick in, and you know, it's very kind of ambiguous, and it takes a lot longer.
That's only half the problem too, is that once your blood sugar gets elevated, you now most likely need more insulin than normal. So if your blood sugar was 150 and you needed to move it 50 points, that would take an amount of insulin. So your common sense tells you, well, if my blood sugar is 350, it just takes a multiple of that to bring it down. But that begins to become untrue for most people. And then you need much more insulin than that. So,
because we also don't have a food on board. indicator. Right. We never know how much, like, sugar we're still getting, or glucose we're still going to get from, or sugar rise we're still going to get from the food.
Right.
But
and so I just keep pushing until I get to where I need to be. Like, so if you're eating a pizza or rice or something like that that sits in your stomach for a long time and takes longer to digest and therefore keeps your blood sugar elevated, I just keep pushing with insulin until it comes back down. I never look at a blood sugar that's high and think, well, I'll just ride this out. I would just rather get it down and then deal with it on the other side if I've used too much insulin. And to your other point, this is easier for me to say because I'm the caregiver of somebody with type 1, because I'm not thinking about being by myself at my house and getting too low to be able to help myself.
That's
so I do not have that concern. Right?
Yeah, nailed it.
And so that's the other side of it. And I wanted to go all the way back to something you said about endos and how frustrating it is at how sometimes they're not very helpful. I'm going to try to make you feel better about this for a second. I don't think they can be. I think that we're almost asking them to do something impossible. Like to talk to a person for 15 minutes four times a year and to understand how to do something that is so labor intensive like diabetes is, it's just they're never really going to know the answer. Like what they should be telling you is, I've given you these building blocks. You're a reasonable person. You need to figure it out the rest of it for yourself. But our society doesn't work that way. People go to the doctor and they want answers. And if the doctor gave you an answer of, look, I really don't know, what do you think? Well, that would feel weird. But I think that's the truth. I think that you know what I mean? I think if they could be honest with you, they'd say, look, I'm not with you. I have no idea. I don't know how you really eat. I don't know how you're using insulin. I don't know any of the things. When I stop and think, Guy, of all the details of my daughter's life that I understand so that I can keep her blood sugar stable, I don't know how in a lifetime I could impart that to somebody else.
Yeah. You got to go in the trenches and learn. And I think as endos, they want to give you the advice that medical professionals should and can and will. But more than that, like you've done and like I'm doing right now, is you've got to get in the trenches and learn. And I think a very useful tool to have is a CGM. But
it's a big difference maker. It really is.
Yeah. But I know you've got to head off soon. So that leaves us with a lot to touch on when I get you on next time. But before you run away, a few quick questions. So,
go ahead.
Omnipod is the same site insertion point and a CGM, or is it different cannulas, for lack of a better phrase?
No, at the moment they're not one and the same device.
Oh, that'd be great.
They're not one and the same device.
Okay.
So Arden wears a glucose monitor just the way you do, and she wears an Omnipod. They're separate.
Okay.
I mean, are they trying to get them together in one thing? It seems to mean that that's what they're talking about, but I would imagine that's many years off. I would think they're going to stay two separate devices.
Yeah.
I mean, for at least the foreseeable future.
It's a struggle because, you got a pump site and then you've got a CGM site. My roommate calls me a moving robot because I got all these. But hey, like, I mean, I'd do that any day over, what they had to do 20 years ago. So
yeah, well, a pump site's only good for 3 days, and your goal with the glucose monitor is to, I think the new one when it's released is going to be FDA approved for 2 weeks. So, I think it would be difficult to combine them. I know everybody wants it to be all one thing, but I mean, I'm obviously not speaking. I don't know anything for sure from anybody, but it doesn't seem likely to me in the near future.
So you mentioned there were some stories that, sometimes you had to go through with Arden there where you had to learn how to do things right. A funny story that's come out of that.
A funny story? Oh my God. There's a lot of funny stories, but I don't know if people think they're funny or not. We pre-bolused for something and she's sitting on the sofa and I said, look, you just have to wait a little bit. And she's like, I'm going to get us. We were pre-bolusing for a snack, but she didn't know what snack she wanted. And so she's kind of hanging out on the sofa and we did kind of like an initial pre-bolus, not knowing, and this is a good idea, like not knowing exactly what she was going to eat, but still understanding that when Arden snacks, she has about this many carbs. So it was a good place to start. So I got her blood sugar moving in the right direction. And I said, hey, it's time to go figure out what snack you want. And she just kind of couldn't motivate herself to get up off the sofa. So I kept pushing her and I kept pushing her. And I said, Arden, you got to go, you know, we're going to have a problem in a couple minutes. You got to go start eating. I said, what's your plan here? And she's like, I'm just going to sit here and die. And so, and she was being very sarcastic. But, you know, I think that's funny.
We've had some good ones.
Yeah.
But, and last but not least, so Scott, you seem to be very knowledgeable in the theory side of things, but also more so the practical side of things. Do you work as a diabetes educator?
I'm a stay-at-home dad. I have been a stay-at-home dad for almost 17 years.
Okay, so how can people learn more? I mean, there is the Juice Box podcast, and I will definitely put the link in, but how can people learn more about you?
Oh, gosh. I have a blog. I've had a type 1 diabetes parenting blog for 9 years called Arden's Day. And, you know, then I started the podcast about a year and a half ago because it seemed like people were getting tired of writing. My dog seems upset about something. Indy, please. This is terrible. Give me a second.
Hey, buddy, come here. Hey, come here. Indy, come on, buddy. Come on.
Sorry. I started the podcast because I thought it just seemed like people weren't reading as much anymore. Not that they weren't visiting the site, but you started getting over 400. I blame BuzzFeed. You get over 400 words and people think you're asking them to read a novel. So I thought, how are people talking to each other now? And I started this podcast. And
amazing.
And what it's basically been is conversations with other people who have type 1. I try very hard not to interview people who already have blogs or have a lot of, I mean, I know a lot of really cool people I should probably have on the podcast, but you can go learn about them anywhere. Yeah. So I try to have conversations with people you literally have never met who don't have a voice. And because I think that when they have conversations and they say, oh, I wish I understood this, or here's something I figured out, you kind of hear yourself in them, in those conversations. And then you almost, I don't know if you learn. You just learn when you see somebody else saying it. It's a weird thing to put
in
perspective.
You learn when you hear a voice you haven't heard before. That's it.
Yeah. It's just very easy. And then we also mix in, you know, we have people on from a lot of the companies. Dexcom's been on a couple of times. Omnipod actually sponsors my podcast, and their CEO is going to be on again next week. I have somebody coming on from Novo Nordisk soon, and I'm trying to bug some people about things about, like, insulin pricing. So we do some stuff that's like that. But no matter who's on the podcast, if it's the CEO of Dexcom, I don't speak to them any differently than I'm speaking to you.
Of course.
And I think that's sort of the idea. Like, I've heard other shows, and it gets a little more formal and things, and not just around diabetes. I just don't want these things to be formal. Like, I'm not looking.
It's going to be fun. And when it's fun, a lot of learning does go on. I think you'll be surprised. But
at this point, it sounds silly, but day after day, messages from people whose A1Cs drop 2 points in 3 months of listening to the podcast. And it's not like the podcast is a step-by-step tutorial. It's just, it's a change of your attitude, I think, more than anything.
That and principles. And I think when you have principles, you can apply it to any situation. There's no answer. It's you've got to find it yourself, but at least you've got the tools to fix the problem. Yeah. But anyway, Scott, I won't hold you back too long. But again, thank you so much for coming on the show. For anyone listening, if you have not heard of the Juice Box podcast, I'll be honest, I've been on Arden's Day, but I haven't read much. Thanks BuzzFeed. But
no one reads.
Juice Box podcast, awesome for long drives and whatever you're doing. Whether it's to relate and laugh together, cry together, whatever you want. But some awesome, awesome stuff there. So definitely check it out. I'll put it in the show notes. But Scott, thanks for your time, and we'll definitely be looking forward to getting you on again soon.
That's great. I really do appreciate you doing this. And I'm sorry, like I said, I know it took us a long time. You are quite literally on the opposite side of the planet from me. So you're always sleeping, but I'm awake.
That's the sucky thing about living in Australia is time difference. Wow. Like, so different.
isn't the sucky thing the possibility that you might sit down in a public toilet and a venomous spider could bite you on your junk? Isn't that
Americans,
the sucky thing?
Oh, Americans.
I heard it on the news yesterday.
No, come on, man.
The same guy says he's been bit on, can we talk like men here, on the tip of his manhood twice by a poisonous spider in his lifetime.
Probably lived in the middle of the bush, but I've got a lot of American friends who tell me, Guy, when I come to Australia, you got to give me whatever protection I need to fend off these venomous things.
I'm joking.
It's not as bad as you think it is.
Well, Guy, as an American, I pride myself on not actually knowing about most of the things that I'm talking about outside of America. So
that's it. Oh, man. You said it, not me.
Yeah.